And hi, welcome to the Feminem podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Dara Kass, editor-in-chief of Feminem. It's my pleasure today to be joined by Dr. Sarah Schaefer, an EM doc finishing her medical toxicology fellowship in Dallas, Texas. And wait for it, the infamous Esther Chu. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Chu is an EM doc and researcher at Oregon Health and Science University and one of the founding members of Feminem. So, Dr. Schaefer, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Chu, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Feminem podcast. We know you're probably live tweeting some viral tweet thread right now as we're recording, but at least we have you for a few seconds.
I am happy to be here, and I am tweeting, as a matter of fact. I think I might tweet out this podcast while we're recording it.
A live tweeted live podcast for So Pod Save America.
Exactly.
We just need to Facebook Live this while we do it. So today we're going to talk about something called benevolent sexism. For those of you who might be unfamiliar with the term, I think we should probably start with a definition. So, Sarah, you just wrote an article for Feminem on this topic. Can you tell us what benevolent sexism is?
Yeah, so I think most people have a pretty good understanding of what we usually think of as sexism, which is defined as hostile sexism. So this is sort of more overt sexism, and it's very overt belief that women are inferior to men, and so gender inequality is a natural result of that inferiority. But benevolent sexism is a little more subtle. What it does is it promotes women in a positive light. And it says, well, women are more affectionate than men, they're more delicate than men, and so they deserve the protection of men. And so it's meant to be a positive enforcement of gender roles. But in the end, it ends up being patronizing towards women.
So you're saying that men are trying to do what they think is the right thing, but in fact, they may be hurting women in gender roles?
Yeah. So a lot of people have this belief that prejudice is hostility. Like it has to come from a place of conflict and antagonism. But when Peter Glick and Susan Fiske came up with this definition, they were trying to argue that prejudice can also be soft and it can be affectionate, and it ultimately ends up being prejudice. And it may not be as easy to identify as things like hostile sexism. So they're trying to draw attention to the fact that, you know, there's the phenomenon happening that is sexism, and it promotes gender inequality, but it is packaged in a really attractive way so that people may not be identifying it the way that they normally would with hostile sexism.
Okay, I'm totally fascinated. I think that we need to kind of move forward with the idea. And more importantly, I think that maybe if we start thinking about real world examples. So what made you think about this topic, or like even decide to write the article for Feminem? Because most people, they find inspiration somewhere.
Yeah. So I was actually inspired by the letter to the editor that was written in Emergency Medicine News back in August. And so in it, a physician wrote in telling female physicians that they needed to balance the roles of being a wife, a mother, and a doctor. And you could tell that he wrote it with the intentions of being supportive. But clearly, there was a lot of controversy surrounding the letter because ultimately it was very patronizing. And so I was interested in writing about benevolent sexism because, to me, I like to look into why controversy happens and try to suss out sort of the underlying conflict or the underlying philosophy that drives a controversy. And because I can imagine the writer of the article and several people in the audience too reading a letter like this and thinking, well, you know, why are people so upset? This is supposed to be supportive. He's just trying to help women. And so I wanted to write about how even when someone's trying to help, they can hurt women, even when they don't mean to. And that sort of is what happens in benevolent sexism.
So Dr. Chu, who I just shortened to Chu a lot, because, you know, we know you're a doctor. So do you remember this little controversy in EM News?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I mean, as Dr. Schaefer. I guess we'll go last names. As Schaefer was talking about it, it was kind of bringing it back to me very vividly. And, you know, actually, as you talk, I can see what you mean. There was something about the tone of it that was friendly and kind, and it was also deeply familiar. And I was wondering what you guys have experienced, whether you have encountered this kind of benevolent sexism in your, you know, in the course of your careers, and if you can give me examples.
So I think I can think of a story that was benevolent sexism at the time, although I certainly didn't know the term, and I think I didn't even realize it was happening when it happened. So as many of you know, physicians get evaluated regularly, as anybody in any job does. And so you sit down with your supervisor and you get to see the feedback other people have of your performance at work. So I sat down for an evaluation once and I got a list of the feedback I had gotten for the past, let's say, year or year and a half or whatever it was. And I look at these evaluations and there are a few of them. There aren't very many. But there's a thread through them that kind of spoke to my personality. Like I was a little abrasive and I was definitely it was a new job and I think I was coming on a little strong. And I looked at these evaluations and I realized that they had been happening for a year, almost a year and a half. And I didn't understand, like, to me, there were personality issues there, but there were really kind of behavior issues there that needed to be addressed to have a good working relationship with the people that I was working with. And so I looked at this, the person that was evaluating me, the person that was giving me these evaluations. And I said, you know, this has been going on for a year and a half. I haven't seen them. You know, why haven't I seen them for so long? And he says to me, well, I didn't really want to show them to you because you were the mother of a sick child. And for those of you that don't know, and I'm sure by the end of anybody listening to this podcast, eventually you all know, my son had a liver transplant when he was 2 years old. And around the time that I was looking at these evaluations, we were working him up for the transplant and I was working up to be the donor. And this supervisor, who was my boss and a revered boss and a wonderful man, really, truly a icon in my field, you know, was trying to protect me. He was like, he knew that I was going through this very difficult time and he really wanted to not contribute to my sense of any emotional instability, failure, upsetness, whatever you want to call it. Like, he wanted me not to have more bad news. And so in that vein, I think he didn't think that it was necessary to show me these evaluations while I was going through that. And so instead, I didn't know they existed. And I went to work. And I behaved the same way over and over again because I had no idea that this was happening. And when he told me that he didn't show it to me because he knew I had a sick child, I said, thank you, actually. I said, thank you for not, for, I didn't know what else. I knew he was coming from a good place. And then I realized after some reflection that I wish I did know about it because I was still going to work and I was still being a doctor and I was interacting with these residents or the nurses or whoever it was in a way that wasn't beneficial to me as a physician. And regardless of what was happening in my home life or what was going on in my emotional health or stability, I needed to know that, right? I protecting me didn't do me any favors, right? And so I think that that's a pretty good example of what we're talking about here. It is benevolent, but it's also sexism.
Well, that's actually a perfect example. So, you know, Peter Fisk writes a lot more about the effects of benevolent sexism. And so one of the effects that he writes about is that if women decline patronizing offers, so offers of help at work, then they're seen as competent, but they're also then seen as less warm. But if women accept offers of help, then they're seen as less competent. So they're placed in this double bind when they're faced with benevolent sexism the way that you were. And so you're kind of inadvertently forced into this choice. Well, do you sacrifice your competence in order to seem like you're more warm or more approachable? Or do you reject help and have risk people seeing you as abrasive or unapproachable?
I feel like that really provides structure to this, you know, the narrow road that women have to walk. I mean, it kind of goes along with whether you fulfill those socially acceptable roles of being agentic or communal.
But
absolutely. Into this framework of how the people around you play a role in reinforcing those. We're always like, huh, where do these roles come from? And why do we feel so conflicted? But it really is sometimes people who imagine themselves as being our allies, who are perpetuating these things in this way that doesn't seem threatening or negative. And I guess that's my question for you too, how do you respond to somebody who's doing this, who's providing this benevolent sexism/pseudo support? Because I imagine that it's crushing for someone who actually thinks that they're being helpful to these women faculty. And I imagine that it might actually be harder to change their behavior than someone who's openly hostile sometimes. What do you guys think is the right response to somebody who does this?
That's a great question, because you're right. First of all, it's hard to even identify when you're a woman experiencing benevolent sexism. Most women actually have a hard time identifying it. The only thing that they might have is like a weird feeling in their gut, which is kind of what you experienced when you found out that the evaluations were being sort of hid from you or shielded from you. And what's also difficult, it's difficult to get support from other coworkers or other women, even when you're experiencing benevolent sexism, because other women don't actually always identify benevolent sexism as sexism. So then you're even more stigmatized because you look like you're somebody who's causing trouble when there is no trouble. And so
I guess, you know, for me, the interesting part, I agree with both of everything you guys are both saying, is that when I spend a lot of time talking about gender equity and empowering change as together, right? Like men and women together coming forward. And one of the, I'm sure, questions that would be out there about this from men is, well, if I can't be a partner in the way that I think that I'm supposed to be a partner, like I'm trying to be supportive and I acknowledge that women have it harder. And so I want to protect them from the difficulties that they have. I don't know how to do it any other way. How do we help them do it another way that isn't sexism? Like, how do we give a guidebook to people that are trying to help to be partners if we're also telling them that the things that they're familiar with are set now in some way kind of a double-edged sword? Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think probably the best thing we can do truly is that recognize that this is less an individual battle and more of a societal battle. There have been research that shows that if there are lower levels of hostile sexism, that there's generally less endorsement of benevolent sexism for men and women. And so by doing what we can to combat hostile sexism and to promote gender equality, we're sort of secondarily solving the problem of benevolent sexism.
Because women maybe don't need as much protection.
Exactly. Well, like,
you're saying they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Like the appearance that women need protection is already the first step to contribute to this. Like in a world where there is equity and that, you know, the perception and the reality that men and women are peers, and true peers, not like somehow, you know, gendered, like emotional differences or whatever you want to call it, then maybe this idea of benevolent sexism, which comes from an idea of protectionism, right? A lot of the ways, goes away on its own.
Absolutely. I mean, hostile sexism and benevolent sexism, they go together. So anytime you find one, you're going to find the other. Mm. And so by fighting against the belief that men and women are different because of their gender and focusing on the gender instead of focusing on our individual characteristics that make us different, then, you know, by focusing on the gender, we're promoting things like sexism, whether it is benevolent or hostile. But if we can move away from that towards what we're all talking about, which is true gender equality, then we're not so focused on someone's gender. We're more focused on what are their individual attributes. And it no longer becomes, well, you know, she is aggressive, or she is, you know, she's too cold as a woman, and so even though she's competent, we don't want to work with her. And it becomes more about, well, she is a leader who's able to make good decisions under pressure. And so by focusing on individual characteristics, hopefully we can get away from the gendered stereotypes that people often rely on.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And I love the concept that the solution is the same. Because my right. questions for you are really going to be like, how do you deal with the hostile sexist? How do you deal with the benevolent sexist? But actually, it's the same underlying problem with different manifestations. So it's more yeah. just sticking to the message, which is we should really focus on individual characteristics rather than what we assume Absolutely. About people simply because of their gender.
And, you know, if people are listening to this wondering, you know, how can I be a better ally? How can I work towards gender equality? I think probably the most important characteristic you can develop in yourself is to be a listener. Because if you listen to people who tell you, hey, this is a problem, hey, this is how this affects me, then it helps you to recognize, oh, you know, I didn't think this would bother you in this way, but now I know that and I can adjust my behavior accordingly, versus hearing somebody give you negative feedback about something you said or something you did, and then immediately becoming defensive, which I think is most people's first instinct.
I think that, and it's funny because, like, I think in my circumstance, what was interesting is if this person who didn't know me very well at the time knew me at all, he would know that the evaluations were clearly indicative of my personality, regardless of the fact that I had a sick child and the fact, and the fact that I also was somebody that wasn't really that. I think that the effects of what I had at home, you know, I went to work and I was able to kind of separate it out a lot. As I think not entirely, but enough that I wanted to be a doctor when I was a doctor. You know what I mean? Like I wanted yeah. to have that space. And what's interesting about that is, in some way, this concept of supporting women in their nurturing qualities and highlighting that they're more, you know, helpers and that they're softer people, it reiterates the other things that they're sometimes trying to not be in that moment, especially at work, right? So like back Definitely. To this EM News article, you know, which was written in response to another article by being, you know, married to medicine. But the person was describing how, you know, in its own season, right? You can be a mom or you can be a wife or you can be a doctor, but you can't be it all at once because they kind of are somewhere in conflict. And I think that maybe that this whole thing is the idea that we don't believe that women a lot of times can be professionals and still be women, right? And so it's the permission to be a woman that is rooted in this.
Yep.
And yet undoing that expectation that you can both be feminine and female and still be a very successful professional, I think would probably address this at its right. core.
I do think too, I guess if I were to make a distinction though between hostile and benevolent sexism, I do feel like there's something to work with the benevolent sexist. There is this instinct.
The benevolent sexist?
What
like a costume
horrible,
for like Halloween next year?
What a horrible
year?
Label to give somebody.
I don't even know what that looks like as a costume. So you walk in and you're like, I'm the benevolent sexist.
You need to, you know, start calling, give that to people as their title. Dear so-and-so, you have been identified as a benevolent sexist. I would like to meet with you.
You're
in
so
my,
BS.
In my office. You're BS.
Wait, I love it though, right? That's so BS. Yeah. That's such benevolent
so
sexism.
Because it is a bunch of BS. but I do think, I guess there is a tiny little piece of whatever's behind it. You know, I like the benevolent part of it, I guess. I like the instinct to be an advocate for somebody often these are people who are going out of their way to say something that they perceive as being encouraging to women. You know, I think there is, can we strip away the content of what they say with that urge to be supportive? And, you know, there are pieces of that that if you couch it in a different way or if it came from a female peer, you might like. You know, I often will say to people, there are just going to be these periods of your life where your productivity goes down. And here are the ways that you balance them, you know. And I'm the first to say that in the first 6 months after having a kid, those tend to be less productive. It's just that I know that I'm going to come back from those things and be more productive. You know, I think there are ways to say that you can kind of strip out pieces of it. If they're couched in the right way, they can really be supportive and valuable for women. So I just, you know, I feel like there is something there that is the intentions are good. We just have to find a way to give feedback about that. Like, thank you so much for wanting to be a benevolent sponsor of my career. Can I ask you to give me the same advice you would give a man at my stage? You know, something like that, that kind of like just reorients them so that they can be helpful in the way that surely they want to be for women, you know?
So now I'm going to ask for any other thoughts, any closing thoughts. Dr. Schaefer, do you have any last pearls about this based on your research?
Well, let me think.
If you don't, we can just forward the article that you're going to publish on FemineM. People can read more about it there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would really encourage them, if they're interested in the topic, to look into some of the sources that are in the article. And the great thing about the internet now is that there's so much information about these different concepts. And so benevolent sexism has a lot of scientific, sort of academic articles, but there's also a lot of easily accessible, sort of more blog articles that are that break down sort of the characteristics of benevolent sexism and how we can recognize it and what we can do about it.
And Dr. Chu, do you have any other closing thoughts on BS?
I have two closing thoughts. My original closing thought was going to be that everybody should read Sarah's piece on FemineM. I just thought it was really thoughtful and well-researched and is also very positive, talks about, you know, how we can move forward from it. My new second point is that we should really coin this term BS and call people out on it. So I'm going to start using it immediately.
Yeah, I think we just named the episode, which is a new thing we've done. So we're calling out BS.
That's what we do. Let's do it every day.
Okay. So Dr. Chu, I'm going to give you the pleasure of, since Dr. Jenny Beck Esme is not here today, do you have any announcements for anybody that might be listening?
I would like to announce that Fix 18 will take place October 16th to the 18th in New York City. This is our FemineM Idea Exchange. The details can be found at feminem.org, and our call for speakers is open and will be open until January 5th. And we would love to see your applications to come and join us for the next conference.
So, and anyone out there that might want to serve as a sponsor for the conference, you can email us at fix@feminem.org. And we promise we'll get back to you right quick because we certainly need sponsorship to be able to pull off a conference like this for over 500 physicians and APPs and partners. So with that, I'm going to thank you guys both
for calling out
BS. And I hope to see you again on the FemineM podcast.